And welcome to the Journalistic Blogger Podcast, and today our guest is Lindsay Hilsum, the international news editor for Channel 4. Her line of work has often seen her covering global conflicts and disasters. So, in this podcast, we ask for her thoughts on the criticisms journalists face when reporting international news as opposed to European news, the lack of attention many of these serious news pieces receive compared to celebrity news, where journalists can improve to change this, and the surprising number of threats and insults they receive as readers jump to conclusions before seeing the full coverage. Now, without further ado, let's get journalistic. Now, getting right into it, we asked her the big question, which was her thoughts on the criticisms the media received when comparisons were made between the coverage of European stories as opposed to the coverage of stories on the other side of the world. Using the recent Beirut and Paris bombings as an example that many people actually felt was reported unfairly as Paris took over news websites across the world as well as social media. And in fact, it isn't just news that's been blamed for this, social media as well, for example Facebook, which gave the option to change your profile picture so that it will overlap with the French flag to show your respect, as well as a check-in feature for your friends and family to make sure that people you know visiting or living in France were okay. Something Beirut did not have.
It was very interesting how suddenly this idea came up that the media, as if it was all one thing and all the same, failed to cover attacks in Beirut and other places which are not in Europe, and yet did in Paris. And that appeared to be from people who had not followed what various parts of the media did. I mean, of course we covered those attacks. We didn't cover in the same depth. And that is because, certainly Channel 4 News, we're broadcasting primarily to a European audience. So a European audience would have a greater interest or concern about something that happened in Europe, a terror attack in Europe. But we do cover the attacks elsewhere. But what we find is, if you look online, I covered an attack in Beirut about 18 months earlier. Only a handful of people retweeted it or, you know, made comments and so on. And you compare that with something like, for example, my colleague Krishnan Gurumurthy interviewed the filmmaker Quentin Tarantino. That got more than a million hits and retweets and so on. So either there are different people who are commenting or the audience is very hypocritical.
As Lindsay just hinted at with her example, celebrity and entertainment news has, for many news sites really, always received multiple times more views than conflict and tragedies elsewhere in the world. And while news closer to home has always had greater public interest, serious news pieces, even those closer to home sometimes, will still pale in comparison to entertainment pieces. But why is it like this when the cost of human life is far more important than the career path of a selected individual?
Well, I think that my parents were brought up in World War II in Britain, and they thought Hitler was coming. They are very interested in the news because to them, war was a reality. It was happening around them. But the current generation doesn't have that experience. They see the news when we're talking about war and terror as something that happens over there, far away. It doesn't affect them. But one of the important things about the migrant crisis and the refugees coming here is that now Syria is coming to Europe. So, you know, maybe that will mean that people will take more interest and have more concern because it does affect them in a way that maybe they didn't realize before. But for many years, since the end of World War II, people in Europe have really lived a very comfortable life. And they haven't had to worry about war. And so that is presumably why they have the luxury of not taking any notice of it.
And while there is clear room for improvements in the journalism sector, as with any other sector really, human nature seems to play a big role here. Some reports actually suggest that readers seem to not enjoy reading serious news on a daily basis. They don't want to, because it makes them feel depressed and frustrated at the world. Worst of all, it makes them feel helpless and have a negative outlook on life. Publications such as The Guardian, for example, has even published opinion pieces aptly titled, "News is bad for you, and giving it up will make you happier." So do journalists take this into account enough?
Well, I totally understand and sympathize with people who find it all too much and find it unbearable. Sometimes I find it unbearable to report. So, of course, people find it unbearable to read or watch. I suppose I just think it's important. It matters. It's what's going on in the world. It's the history of our time. And obviously, I feel passionately that we need to know what's going on. You have to know, you know, in the end, they come for you. You have to be aware of what other people are going through. But I do realize that people feel powerless, and often you are powerless. And sometimes all you can do is just some small thing of giving money to charity or trying to, you know, sometimes I did a report the other week about refugee kids from Syria and Lebanon who are having to work instead of going to school because basically there weren't enough school places, but also because their parents were so poor. And I got somebody contacting me saying that she wanted to pay for one of the kids who I featured in the story, pay for him to go to school. Now, on the one hand, that doesn't solve the problem. On the other, you know, that's really good. And if we can help that and get that kid in school, then you've done one thing, one small thing. So I think that you often get reactions like that, that people want to do something, they don't know what, and then they just sort of, you know, they home in on one particular case. And that's human nature too. I don't have an answer to it. But in the end, I feel that it's important that people should be aware of what's going on in the world, and it also affects their political decisions and who they vote for and the pressure they put on democratic governments. But no, I'm a journalist and I can't solve the world, and the viewers can't solve the problems of the world either.
Now, when we're talking about human nature itself turning some individuals off staying updated with a foreign conflict or tragedy, and with journalists publishing opinion pieces quite often, such as Lindsay's piece titled "We cover bomb attacks in Beirut too, but viewers show less interest," an article she wrote in reaction to baseless accusations of not caring. Another example is by Barry Malone from Al Jazeera back in 2015, who wrote a piece titled "You Probably Won't Read This Piece About Syria." A piece pointing out that crucial documentaries and images they produced, which to be honest are equally as powerful as the single image of the Syrian child found dead on the beach that trended, and they did not seem to have gotten much attention at all. So do these opinion pieces mean that journalists feel like their hands are tied in a business that often seems to rely on vanity metrics such as views and clicks over stories that need to be told? Lindsay doesn't believe this is the case. She doesn't believe journalists have their hands tied.
I don't feel that my hands are tied, but yes, I'm aware that when I do a story, I have no idea what impact it's going to have. And I can look back over stories which I think have been, you know, been very important, which really nobody seems to have taken any notice of. But then you just keep going. I mean, that's what it is to be a journalist. In a sense, I don't think you can spend your time worrying about the impact of what you do. You just try and do your job as well and as conscientiously as possible. And if my story doesn't have the impact which I think it ought to have, maybe I didn't tell it properly. Maybe I didn't write it well enough. We didn't find the best pictures. You've just got to keep trying to do it as well as you can, because you can't define the outcome. You can just do your job to the best of your ability. Sure, I fail every day as a journalist. I every day I try and I don't always get it right, and it's, you know, you can't always blame the viewers or the readers, but you know, you try your best, and there's loads of us trying our best, and hopefully some of us some of the time reach some of the people.
The next question we asked Lindsay was what she thought could be done in the journalism sector to improve this situation.
It's very difficult. I don't know if this is a change, but I think that as journalists, we constantly need to strive for new ways of telling the story. And you also do need new people coming in. You do need young journalists. And sometimes I think, you know, that young journalists who know less than I do may do a better job, because they may be outraged about something for the first time. And there's a power to somebody being outraged for the first time, as opposed to me, who's outraged all the time. And, you know, I've been doing it a long time. And sometimes, you know, there's that freshness, which is really, really good. And I think that with multimedia and all these different ways. You know, we heard from the woman from BuzzFeed who told an entire story through a WhatsApp conversation. I thought that was brilliant. So there's lots of different ways, but ultimately, in the end, it's the same. It's somebody who tries to be objective and tries to be truthful, who is an eyewitness, who tries to tell the story of what they see and the people they meet and to make sense of it, to understand it. Because I think that is also a problem. That some, one of the reasons why people turn off is if you just have endless human suffering, that you don't understand why it's happening. You don't understand the politics behind it. You don't understand the geopolitics behind it. And I think that's another of our big responsibilities as journalists is to try and understand and explain that well, to put things in context. But, you know, not everybody is going to have that long an attention span. And that is part of the problem that we have today, that people have very short attention spans. And if you want to really understand, you need to concentrate for a bit.
We also asked her about solution journalism as a potential solution to help readers feel less helpless. It's a new form of journalism gaining popularity that focuses not just on the five W's, who, what, why, where, and when, but also the how, what is being done about it, and whether the solution being applied right now is or isn't working. It has the aim of giving the readers the tools to know what is going on behind the scenes and how it started, as well as the possibility to potentially interact with what's going on. While in theory this sounds good, Lindsay showed some hesitation in actually applying it into a journalist's role as an observer.
I'm a bit suspicious of solution journalism because I'm not sure I have the solutions. I've learned over the years how to... I'm an observational journalist. I'm an eyewitness. I go out and find out what's going on or part of what's going on. I can't get, you know, necessarily get the full picture. You know, that's not possible for one person. And I don't always know what the solution is, and I don't actually think that that's my job, and I don't think I want that responsibility. I will tell you what I see as best I can and as honestly as I can, but I'm not going to tell you what the answer is because I don't know.
Now, this is where it gets interesting. In a recent discussion panel hosted by Polis and London Press Club, obviously in London, called Migrants, Terror and the Media, Yasmin Alibhai-Brown from The Independent, Matthew Price from BBC Radio 4, William Wintercross from The Telegraph, and Lindsay herself talked about how they were no strangers to receiving threatening comments and emails when covering the front lines. For example, Yasmin Alibhai-Brown received comments such as, "You are the worst type of Muslim, you appear to be like us," which is pretty shocking. Matthew Price also recalled reading, "You bastard, you want us all to be blown up." Although this may just be the nature of the internet, which has always brought out the worst in people, as well as the best sometimes, Lindsay herself has faced this recently.
Well, it was very interesting. I found that I got some abuse for showing pictures of children. People said to me on Twitter, "Oh, but this isn't true. These migrants are all young men. They're not children." You know, which begged the question, how did I find the children if they didn't exist? So that was one thing. And there was an assumption that if you told people's stories, the human stories, that you were in some way favoring one particular policy or another. In other words, that you were saying, oh, Europe should have an open door and all of these people should be allowed in. Whereas, in fact, as a reporter, I wasn't saying anything about policy. I was there doing my job, which is telling the story of what is going on. And what was going on was all these people were arriving, some of them young single men, some of them families, some from Syria, some from Afghanistan, a couple who I met were from Senegal, from all sorts of different places with all sorts of different reasons. And I was trying to tell their stories and explain what was going on. I certainly wasn't advocating one policy or another, but that was how it was taken.
This begs the question if one needs to have thick skin to keep up with seeing the visually striking scenes on one side of the world when they're reporting and occasionally receiving online abuse on the other end. So is a thick skin necessary in this line of work?
Well, of course, in the old days, you didn't get so much feedback from people because you didn't have social media when I started. And you get a lot more feedback now. But I have to say that in general, the feedback I get is very positive and nice. And I get lots of people who come up and thank me for the reporting I do, which is very, very kind of them. So, yes, you do have to have a thick skin. But you know that there are both sides, and there's a lot to be said for the feedback you get, because I also get people emailing me or tweeting and telling me I've got something wrong, and sometimes I have, and I'm very grateful to them for pointing it out, and so that I can correct it.
And is it possible to stay objective?
Of course, there's no such thing as absolute objectivity, and I'm not objective in the sense of, for example, I covered the genocide in Rwanda. I'm not objective in the sense of, on the one hand, it's a bad idea to kill the Tutsis, on the other hand, it's a good idea. No, I'm not objective about that. I think genocide is a terrible thing. Murder is a terrible thing. War is a terrible thing. Obviously, I think that. But I think that one way in which one can become more objective is that I think that early on you can become attached to causes and believe that a particular rebel group, for example, is absolutely right because the government is horrible, and you can sort of almost throw in your lot with them. I know many journalists who have. And then you find that they become just as bad as the government before them, which they overthrew. And they start to throw people in prison and, lock up journalists and all the rest of it. So I think that in some ways one becomes more objective or more skeptical because you find out that the people who originally seemed like the good guys turn out not to be the good guys after all, or only the good guys for a short space of time. And that's a lesson that you just learn in life.
Now that we're reaching the end of this podcast, we asked for her advice for budding journalists looking to be international reporters.
Well, the first thing I would say is if you're young and you want to be a journalist, probably don't start by doing conflict. Start by, building up your understanding and knowledge and expertise and ability to calculate risk, because that is very important. So, I would not advise people to go herring off to a dangerous place immediately. But the main thing is to get experience and to go somewhere which interests you and just start reporting and trying to get under the skin of a place and a people. There is nothing more satisfying than that.
I hope you found this podcast interesting. I certainly did. And the articles that were mentioned in this podcast should be available below. Now, what do you think could be done to encourage more readers to read serious news pieces and keep updated? Are journalists doing enough? And were you aware that journalists like Lindsay face these kind of problems in their line of work? Be sure to share your thoughts below. Until next time.